Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into what I hope to be an illuminating conversation around education, in South Africa. There's a lot that can be said. Some people have problems with basic education, with curriculums, with tertiary education, vocational education. There's so many things that are involved in the world of education, but it's very important, and the level of education in any country and any economy tends to have a big correlation to the economic output of that country. But when you are thinking about how do you solve for issues in education, or at least uplifting education, if we're gonna go back to basics, then reading is probably the most fundamental thing that we need to deal with. So today we're going to be talking to Chris DeBeer, who is a director over at Quali Books, just to get their sense of, how do you inculcate a culture of reading, in South Africa, some of the efforts that they've been, making. I understand that the business has been around for a couple of decades now, and, some of the progress that has been made, what are the issues in the space, and, where do they see things going? Chris, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madiwa. I appreciate your time and for enabling us just to share a little bit more about our experiences in the marketplace. So I'm looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have today.
Let's begin with the basics. What's the elevator pitch on Quali Books?
Very simply put, we want to get a reading habit going amongst South African children. Full stop. Mm. It's as simple as that. This is not about a reading culture. This is not about South Africa. It's a global phenomenon with a digital space that's taken over our lives. Children and parents are reading less and less. The habit that our parents had of introducing us to the world of books over and above the schooling system, it's not there anymore. You'll find more and more households that don't have books on shelves. Everyone is reliant on technology, and that's not a bad thing per se.
Yeah.
So what we are trying to achieve is to reintroduce the habit, and in a fun and enjoyable fashion, and not specifically linking it to the curriculum as such. We can go into that a little bit later, because sometimes that can come across as controversial or arrogant, but it's not meant in that way. There's a reason for that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the mechanism. How exactly have you guys gone about trying to, make this happen? And for how long, have you been at this?
Well, since inception. We opened our doors in 1992. Mm. Quick story, under a tree, boot of a car, Mossel Bay, a flea market. That was the birth of Quali Books. Mm. And fast forward 32 years later, here we are. It's baby steps. This is not an industry. If you want to get into the industry, this is not a get-rich, quick environment at all. It's a labor of love. It's a passion. And over the decades that I've been involved personally, this is not a job. It's not a day-to-day business. It's a lifestyle, as it were. Putting a smile on a child's face, on a teacher's face, that is what you get out of it at the end of the day. Obviously, we're a business. You need to put bread on the table. But in doing so, enriching and giving a child an opportunity at a brighter future.
Because we're from the world of finance, you have this big goal. And as you said, it's baby steps all along the way. How do you guys as a business make money? How have you guys kept yourself sustainable? Because 1992 until now, that's many years, to be alive and going. So what's the model that you guys use from a sustainability point of view?
I think from a commercial perspective, it's like any other industry, it happens to be books.
Yeah.
So whether you're selling shoes, food, whatever it might be, you put a profit margin in. You buy something at cost, and you build in your margins, taking your overheads and everything else into account. So it's a simple business model as far as that's concerned. what you do find, and that's an important factor, is in our industry, for some reason, when you tell people that you are in the publishing or the book sector, libraries specifically for kids, people tend to cock their heads to the side. It's almost as if it's pitiful. It's like, oh, that's noble, that's sweet. And that is something I desperately would like to see erased.
Yeah.
It's a professional industry like any other industry, and we need to be treated in that manner, as opposed to everybody, you know, people coming to you from all walks of life saying, we need free books, this, that, and the other. I get it. I understand it, that in terms of the economy and the inequalities that there are, the beneficiary shouldn't actually have to fit the bill. Mm. But there are mechanisms in place that enable that. This just happens to be books. So we budgets, it's a side that gets, that is made available, you know, in the marketplace out there. When it comes to the library side of things, it's almost as if that's the forgotten sector. That's the sector that must be charitable, and I don't believe it needs to be. Mm. I find that the library sector needs to be revisited in terms of its importance,
yeah,
and the role that it plays in the education spectrum, because it's vital. It's a value add to the child's learning experience. It's not the curriculum. It's not the teaching mechanism. It's a tool that they can use to practice what they're being taught in the classroom, and that essentially is part of our mantra, and getting the habit going, is enabling quality product to be made available to the children through whatever channels are available out there.
Okay. So when it comes to that, the distribution, right, what are you guys using? Because I understand there's libraries. I understand that there are mobile libraries as well. So what's happening with the libraries are, because, you know, you have the traditional notion of what a library is. You go there, you take a book out, and then you have it for a period, and then you come in, you return it. Or are you guys, you know, selling books? Like, what's actually happening with the libraries?
So with the libraries, just going back to the business model itself, the origin was getting library book resources from various publishers and then reselling it. So just quickly how that works, it was called the remainder business, as it were. So publisher X prints 10,000 copies of a book. They sell 9,500 at, let's say, the retail price of 100 rand, for the sake of an argument. They have 500 left. The market is saturated. Mm. So we then bought those 500 for 5 rand, just to get rid of their stock. And then we'd resell it at 20 rand. Mm. So there's a good profit, and that creates a new market. So that was the origin of the company. So that grows. And to this day, that is still a component of, but much less of. Then we receive licenses from publishing partners, locally and internationally, that we are allowed to sell the books. So whether it's directly to moms and dads or to schools, the departments themselves, provincial, national, as well as through corporate South Africa through their social investment channels, these are all the funding mechanisms to get the books into the hand of the child. Because at the end of the day, the job is to get the book into the child's hand. How we do it is the mechanisms that are available out there. So it is the hard copy book that is still the primary building block to get a reading habit going. Mm. Digital is fine. You and I can do it because we can read. We've been there, done that. But we need to get our children who don't read to give them that opportunity to open a book, because it engages all their senses.
Yeah.
But the digital space is there, which is something we've explored in later years, thanks to COVID. The only good thing in our opinion that came out of COVID, it forced us to consider the digital space. And here we are today as well. A great combination, because now we are able to reach children in a way that we've never been able to. The digital space provides that. It's not there to replace the hard copy book ever. Mm. And globally, you'll see that's a phenomenon that comes out where people still want that hard copy book because it releases feelings, emotions, it lowers your heart rate, and that experience of reading a book, there's just nothing like it. And most people, way more than 50%, say hard copy still. Yes, digital, do your research, read something online, but nothing beats a book.
I'm actually glad that you've brought that out, because I was going to ask, you know, to say in an age where even babies are being given tablets and phones, you know, to deal with and play with, and I don't want to use the word pacify, but, you know, it is what it is. And they're given that exposure so early, right? How do you, I guess, break up that that affinity, you know, to those devices, to have, you know, something physical in the form of a book that, you know, pages. I've seen some funny memes online of, you know, a child or a baby being given a book and they're struggling because it's not, you know, it's not responding. You can't touch, you can't swipe the book.
I know exactly which ones you're referring to. I've seen them.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, you've got physical and you've got digital. At the end of the day, it's information, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it's there to stimulate and help the child grow out of curiosity, out of enjoyment, expanding the knowledge, vocabulary, etc., and confidence. Confidence is a big thing. If you can read, you are confident. And especially when you've got a well-rounded general knowledge, it just helps you. But one of the biggest, it's not a drawback, in fact, we see it as a challenge, is some of the schools, the parents say, oh, please, they sigh. So not something more digital. Everything's digital, 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 and they're getting sick of it to a degree. But what we say to them is the reality of life. Everything is becoming digitized. That is not going to change, okay? Unless the end of the world, unless it's Armageddon, that's the only time it's going to change. But the reality is it's there. It's how we use it, how we apply the digital space. So if your child is online or using some form of technology for 4, 5, 6 hours a day, newsflash, it ain't going to change. But what are we doing with that time? And what we are trying to do, especially with our digital platform, is to ask parents and the communities to introduce a healthy digital habit over and above your social media, online gaming, watching your movies, listening to your music. Carry on doing that. Don't punish the child by telling them you cannot go and play with your friends or Facebook until you've read for an hour. You've lost a reader right there. We've got to reintroduce the way in which we encourage our children to read. If we want to get that habit going, put them in charge, saying, here's something. You've got access to thousands of books. Find something of interest. Tell me about it. You don't have to read the whole book. Just tell me if there's what topics do you like. Go and find it. Read something about it, because that's the stimulation. Empower them to do it. And we say 5 minutes a day. It's not scientific, unless it might be. I missed that article. It's not an exact science. But common knowledge tells you if you practice something just 5 minutes a day, a habit will start forming. But I get it. Not everyone is a reader, and that's fine. But at least we're giving more children an opportunity or a choice. And that's what it's about. And I think our generation, you and me, it's our responsibility. If we're not enabling or providing that choice, that's on us. But if we can walk away and put your head on a pillow at night and say, I've done what I can, but I've got 100 kids, 50 of them say, I'm not interested in reading, that's okay. I've done my bit to try and enable it. But what we're finding there is lack of access. So besides the digital concern that some parents might have, when they see it in that light and said, it makes sense because it's not going to change. But let's introduce those 5 minutes a day. And I'm not saying reading is the be all and end all. And we know, you know, environmentally, on a bigger picture, there are bigger issues, you know, running water, access to food, et cetera, et cetera. What we're saying, though, is from the specs, or the statistics that reveal more than 70% of South Africans have got or make use of the internet and to read something on the internet. There is a big pocket that don't have access, maybe, but we're not saying we are the solution for everybody. What we're saying is we can optimize access to those who can right now, because that's going to make a difference. Because one of the questions or one of the concerns that we are met with from various sectors is, are people don't have access to internet? Are people don't have devices? And saying, well, that's not true. When we started doing our research before we launched the platform, is at that stage, and I think that was 2020, there were more than something like 22 million smart devices in the hands of South Africans alone, of which only 7 odd million are in the hands of your higher income bracket.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of South Africans do have access to the internet in some way, shape or form. I get it. Not everybody, but more than half. Imagine if the 15 million children that fall within the demographic we support have access to today, if 10 million of them have access, imagine the impact that's going to have on the economy in the next 5, 10, 15 years. You're going to have an educated, schooled group of children that can apply themselves to the greater good of the country.
You know, one of the things that might help us a bit, because I know that in our world, numbers and data tend to communicate a lot. you know, for us. Are there any stats or figures that speak to what the rates of readership, you know, look like in South Africa, or like, and I don't even know what metrics, you know, your industry uses to gauge levels of readership in the country, whatever you can share on that front.
From a South African perspective, it's difficult because I'm not sure if the powers that be, who hold that information have it to hand, or if it's being done. What I can do, what I can share is from our own perspective,
yes.
Our own analytics and statistics.
Yeah.
Are telling a story.
Yeah.
From a digital perspective now, we have got something like 70,000 users,
yeah.
Of which around about 22 to 25,000 are active users.
Yeah.
So that's more than 35%. And I see the global new product adoption rate is between 25 to 30. So we're happy with that. We're saying we know we're doing something right. We know we're onto the next best thing. But from a statistic purpose, the active use on the platform for the last 3 years, August will be 3 years this year, that we've launched the platform, more than 60%, well, less 69% of all reading activity on our platform is happening after school hours.
Okay.
And that speaks to habit,
yeah, okay,
that we're,
yeah,
trying to get, because you're not a reader if you read in school, because it's compulsory. You have to. There's a library period. You spoke earlier on about the traditional environment. It's there and it's good. It must be there. But with the digital age, you're enabling children to read in the comfort of their own home,
mm,
on a weekend, on holiday, anywhere they are, as long as they've got access to the internet. So what we are seeing is that children are reading on the weekends. And of the stats, 21% of all activity is happening on a weekend,
okay,
and Sunday being the biggest reading day of all. So who would have thought that? So the digital age enables you, because it's linked directly to the devices without compromising private information. It's of all the current users. And that's a drop in the bucket. So it's powerful. So that means a habit is forming, because the only way for a habit to form is to practice after hours.
Mm.
You learn in school. And this is a thing that needs to be understood with some platforms, is that the job of a platform is not to teach the child to read. That's the educator's job. That's why your child goes to school, is to learn and to grab hold of the tools that the teacher is deploying. Where do I practice it? And this is where platforms like this, or books on shelves in the homes, that's where it comes in, the community library.
Mm.
That is where the practice comes in, because what's the point of learning a skill if you're not going to apply it? The same as, and I like to equate the analogy I use is sport. Let's say football. You can learn the theory behind the game. You can have your practice sessions, your technical sessions. You can get the scientists to help you with your diets and all of that. That's all good and well.
Mm.
But are you a Messi or a Ronaldo that kicks a ball relentlessly an hour or three after the time? That's, yeah, how you get good at it.
Yeah.
And this is what we're trying to say.
So from that point of view, because, you know, it's a very interesting one, because when it comes to a lot of fundamental issues in the economy, right, we often talk about poverty, inequality as being some of the big issues, you know, in the economy. And the education aspect has been touted as one of the big ways that you find ways of attacking that. It's done very well for, let's say, your Asian countries. You know, the rates of education there are just on another level. I often tell people that I personally wrote in my high schooling days, I wrote O and A level exams through Cambridge University. And I don't think there's a more competitive assessment platform, because you're not writing, or because in essence it's a competition, because your grades are on a bell curve. It's not set in stone, right? Your ability to get an A, B, C, or D are dependent on what children around the world have been doing. And if you've been able to engender that habit of, you know, reading and education in one part of the world, as we've seen, at least during my days, it was the Asian countries pushed up your bell curve towards the right. So you might end up in a situation where D is starting at 60%, because so many kids around the world have been passing. And there's that active role that inculcating a reading habit, because a large part of doing well, especially at A level, is comprehension. It's no longer regurgitation of facts. It's your ability to think and comprehend and all that. When I then think about, you know, coming back to this conversation at just the fundamental level of reading, I'm just then worried to say, like, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to make sure that kids just read? Are we trying to make sure that they read to comprehend? Are we trying to get them to read fiction? Are we trying to get them to read nonfiction? Not sure from a Quali Books point of view if there's any vision or mission statement on that, you know, or from that point of view.
Well, this is the essence, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can give you stats quickly that we released now as at end of March in terms of the spend.
Yeah.
In the schooling system.
Yeah.
Well, it's public knowledge, so it should be. Just under 1.8 billion rand was spent in the last year, in the last 12 months,
yeah,
on LTSM, which is learners, the teacher support material. So it's your textbooks and stationery and all of that. 1.8 billion rand. Okay. So this is textbooks. And we, for some reason, personally, I believe we're getting it wrong. We're so focused on the theory behind reading. Teaching. Everything is teaching oriented and everything is outcomes based. Every lesson plan, which is dubbed as a library, is an outcome. I said, no, library is fun. Just distinguish between the two, because you will find in the education system, more often than not, we've got exhibitions that you attend. The teachers come in, it's a library exhibition. First thing you get asked is, do you have teachers' guides and handbooks? I said, no, which part of library do you not understand? That's textbooks. That's curriculum. There's a lack of understanding of what the two are. You got teaching and you got value adding, you got resourcing, referencing. That's the purpose of a library. That's not where you find your textbooks and all of that. That's one of the biggest drawbacks that we've got at this stage. Another question we get asked is, are your books CAPS aligned? So like, show me any country in the world where a library book is aligned to their curriculum. It doesn't exist. But you have to change the way, because in the past that used to irk me. It's like, no, it's frustrating, but you got to change the way you go about it. So the answer is yes. Of course it is. If you want a book on mountain ranges, of course it's linked to geography. Of course it is. So there's truth in that, but it's not, because we are so, I would say, indoctrinated in the education space that a textbook, if it doesn't say CAPS, I can't use it. I said, no, you can. But you don't understand how to use the book. That's the problem. The educators need to be trained, need to be schooled. I'm a big believer in that. We need to get the education system up and running. I remember back in the day as a child, the three pillars of your society were your teacher, your nurse and your police uniform. That was your society was built on that, your towns. You had respect. That needs to be reintroduced into society. And South Africa has got the capacity to do that, to have that respect, because we are a respectful culture or nation. We need to reintroduce those and quickly. The joke was always that the five pillars of a small town is your teacher, your nurse and your policeman, and then the bottle store and the church. And those were the five, you know, so that was the kind of thing. But today you don't have that. Mm-hmm. And teachers are the most important thing. We can remember that. You ask anybody, what do you remember? You remember a teacher. They taught you something very valuable. It wasn't actually found in a book. So we are so obsessed with the curriculum, spending 1.8 billion. You know how much of that was spent on supplementary material, which is code for library type of resources.
Mm.
6%.
Wow.
I think it's about 100 million. Of that, 1.8 billion was spent on resources. There's the problem. Grade R, okay, your basic, your entry level, I think it's something like 600,000 or something like that on a national scale. That's where the problem is.
Mm.
Okay. So we need to revisit that. I would love to see our education system take a gamble and say, you know what, for the next 5 years, it's not going to be a textbook of a day old. Let's focus, let's reinvest, because we've been talking. Madiba, I joined in 2002. Okay, at that stage, more than 80% of our public schools didn't have functional libraries. It's 22 years later.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed.
Wow.
So we do mobile libraries. We put the place in full of books. We get corporates and entities to sponsor them. We go into schools that they support. And that's the way that entities like us try and get the resources into the hands of the children. You know, the digital method, getting into the schools, getting the schools to take up subscriptions so that kids can read now in the comfort of their own home as well. They're not restricted to the school environment in terms of access. So there's a lot of things that can be done, and a lot of people are doing good. It needs to be highlighted because we also sit, and I say that to corporates all the time. And they say, no, they don't want any, you know, it's just they're doing it for the love of it. I say, yes, but it's important because society, especially in some of the mining related fields, is that everyone is always pointing fingers at you, but they don't know what you're actually doing. Besides the road, the infrastructure and all of that, there is good. You need to be acknowledged. And we are a believer in that. And obviously it doesn't work for everybody, and that's fine, but we're there to support, to say, Modiwa did this. We want to be able to share it and saying, this is what's happening, because there are lots of Modiwas in this world. And they need to be recognized, and we need to stand together saying, you know, put your hand up. And we say that to schools all the time. If you want support, you've got budgets and allocations. You must support us, because there's the false belief that schools can't. They can't buy their own resources. Yes, they can, but it depends on whether they are a Section 20 or Section 21, whether you know the procurement is on behalf of or themselves. Yes, they're supposed to ring fence around about 10%, but it's not legislated. So the money's going to more of the other related materials. It's a huge industry. Library side, we're right at the bottom over there, but everybody understands the vitality of it. You listen to all the newscasts, print media, and all of that. Literacy is so important. Literacy, this, that, and the other. The Pearl survey was 81%. And it's like, why is everyone excited about that? We know there's a reason. It's actually very simple. Let's start doing something about it. Let's stop talking. Let's stop having meetings about what went wrong and what that doesn't help. Let's do.
Yeah.
Let's be doers. And that's the excitement. I think from on a personal perspective, that's what I love about my job, is you see that impact. Just last week when I released another video, went into a school, mobile libraries branded for the corporate and all of that, and thousands of books that go in there. You must see those kids. You must see the excitement, because children aren't stupid. There is no such thing as a stupid child.
Yeah.
There's only such a thing as a child that is that's being held back because of us, because of the adults, the current generation. So there's a lot of work to be done, and it's a passion plea, and get stuck in. And while we also ask the corporates is, when you do invest, please put in the effort and come with. It's all good to write out a check, because then you've done your job and you've got to be scorecard or whatever it is that you're doing it for. Come with me to that school and experience the impact that you're making. That's a game changer for them, that they want to then continue. This is what we are striving to achieve.
Yeah, there's always a lot to unpack when it comes to something like this, because a conversation like this certainly shows you that when you're trying to attack something like reading, it's not just a matter of trying to put as many books in people's hands as possible. There's a lot of extenuating factors that are actually driving either people's adoption or non-adoption, you know, of your things like reading. And it's also shows that I often think that you can tell a lot about the priorities of a society or an economy or an organization, a government or whatever it is, based on where they are allocating their capital. And the number that you gave, the 1.8 billion, when you said it just now, it's a big number, but within the context of a 4.5, maybe 5 trillion rand economy, it's nothing. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm going to agree with you there on that point. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's also a but.
Okay.
Okay. And the but being, what is it being applied to? I'm not talking about salaries and all of that. That's aside. So if that is the amount of money being spent on the hardware, on the stuff, what stuff? I think that's the question. Because you're not supposed to be – I've walked into countless schools, and obviously I'm not going to mention names or provinces or anything like that. Yeah. The sheer volume of procurement of curriculum-based material, to use my words, that is sitting in its original wrapping on shelves, unused, simply because the school's got to spend. Schools get big budgets.
Yeah,
No mistake. That money's got to be spent. So it's, where is it being spent? And this is the question, saying there is a solution. Why don't we just take 1 year and just turn the whole thing on its head, and we invest in libraries? Because we cannot be sitting, you mentioned the Asian, countries, the Europe's, the Americas. On average, you will have between 7 to almost 30 books, library books, per child in their library system, in their particular school, on average, per child.
Yeah.
Okay. In South Africa, we're saying more than 80% don't even have a functional library. That's how on the other side of the scale we are. That's how big the problem is. And you're not going to fix it overnight. It's going to take generations, but we need to start and really, really actively start and pump millions, billions into it to give the children a chance of reading. Because you said it now yourself. We can put all the books in the world and, you know, into your school. And we've done it. And that's part of the learning curve. It's like, great, here's a wagon with books. We roll it out there. Come back 6 months later, still standing there. Those books are pristine. They've never been opened. What's the point? Mm-hmm. What's the point of that? So you realize there's gatekeepers. We have to change the way. Get it into the child's hand. And this is part of the digital age, so that you can bypass everybody and just give it to the child. That's where the choice lies, and the ability. Because when you go into a school without fail or exhibitions, conferences we attend, and you talk to a school, say like, do your kids read? Simple question. So, oh no, nobody reads this, that, and the other. And say like, okay. Second question is, what are the problems? Is it an access thing? And that's when the truth comes out. It's not that kids don't want to read. They don't know where to find resources, or they don't know how to access them. That is a thing that needs to be addressed, saying that there are entities. We're not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
As much as I love what we do and what we represent, we need 1,000 Qualibookses to be able to have a serious impact on society at large. There's a lot of work to be done, and it's not an overnight journey. If we've been doing this for 20 years, the impact is – you're making an impact, and you have to believe it. If you roll into your school with 1,000 kids, in 10, 15 years, there's a child that's going to remember that day that happened. I mean, you probably can. I certainly can remember things that happened to me when I was a youngster. It's impactful. But the best gratification you can get as a human being, I do believe, is to believe that people are saying good things about you behind your back, and you will never, ever know it. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is a philosophy and something that we really try hard to achieve. So I don't want the kudos, but I'd like to think that somewhere – something I did 15 years ago has made an impact, and that's a happy thing. So we can get romantic about it, but the reality is the work that needs to be done, it's there, and it can be. It's there for, we must just all acknowledge it and say, let's work. Roll up sleeves, get down to business.
So that's how we land today's conversation. It has been a really great one, just attacking the issue of reading in a country like South Africa. What are some of the issues, in that particular sphere? And what I think is really great and has probably been the main point to highlight from a situation like this is that when it comes to trying to inculcate a culture of reading and those reading habits, what is really going to be important is the interventions and some of the programs that are being put into place either at home level or at school level to actually make sure that kids are interested in actually touching the books and actually having them in their hands. To use one of the examples that was given just now is to say that you can go and we've seen this in many different arena. A company goes and donates an entire computer lab, but you come back a few years later and the computers haven't been used. And in the same way, you donate books, you create, do all this, but you come back and the books haven't been touched. What are some of the things that needs to be done, at that level? And for now, someone like Chris is just letting us know that perhaps digital is one of the ways that you can help, to have that more direct interaction, at the child level. And it's also quite stark to hear some of the stats, between where South Africa sits versus some of the Western and Asian countries. I think you said 7 or 8 books per child.
Minimum.
Almost virtually none. Not to say that, books, but I guess the structure and the infrastructure around those
Correct.
Books, very telling. And I guess, when you then look at some of these issues, if you take a first principles approach, you then understand why perhaps at the top of the funnel, perhaps your metric pass rates aren't, where they're meant to be. At the bottom, you've got, and reading is just one of the issues, you know, that needs to be attacked, you know, before we can actually, you know, take education to the next level. So that's been it. It has been a really great one. We're talking to Chris DeBeer, who is, you know, a director over at Quali Books. Thank you so much for coming to join us. He is joining us today in our studios right here in Johannesburg. Chris, thank you so much for being with us.
Madiwa, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to share a little bit more. I wish we had hours and hours. We could talk the whole day, but I know we can't. And I hope there's a little bit of information that resonates with someone out there. Let's be the difference that we want to see.
Stop talking, start doing. Maybe very quickly before we just properly close it out. What is the fundamental difference between your digital offering and your in-person libraries?
The basic difference between the two is access, unrestricted access.
Yeah.
Remember, your hard copy environment restricts you. If there's a book, if you read it, I cannot access it until you've returned it in a library system.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not going to be talking about the cost component, because obviously the cost differential is massive. That is a big factor. But on the digital space, it works like your major streaming services. Yeah. So whether it doesn't matter, of our 70,000 users, they can all go online on their separate devices at the same time, access the same book at the same time without restriction. No restriction on how many books you can read per day. You don't have to finish the whole book. There's no downloading and pay for play. It's subscription based. So it's very easy, like Netflix.
Yeah.
If you watch movies all day long, great. If you don't, you still pay your subscription fee, and it's that cheap. I mean, you know, it's we don't want to get into that now, but for $2.99 per year, more than 8,000 books, do the math on that. Okay. You know, so everything has its place in the world. It's going to work for some, it's not going to work for everybody, but it's out there, and we can reach more children than ever before. Parents, it's up to them.
Yeah.
It's up to you to be that difference. It doesn't help. We're all proud of our kids. You want to see your little Johnny or your little Susie be the next president, be the next CEO, but you're not helping them if you're not introducing reading to them. That's the bottom line, because reading will enable them to have a good schooling experience, be academically more proficient, and have a shot at a future. That's what it comes down to. That is the bottom line, reading.
All right, great. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.